Hello, and welcome to Leaders for Business as Unusual, exploring views from progressive green business leaders. In this episode, Dr. Charles Barthold, Senior Lecturer in Human Resources Management and Organisation Studies at the Open University, talks to Alec Mills, the co-founder of DAM.
Thank you so much for accepting this interview. Alec, could you tell me a little bit about yourself? Could you introduce yourself and could you introduce the organization which you are involved in leading, please?
Thanks very much for having me on, Charles. So my name is Alec Mills. I am the co-founder of DAME, which is a period brand that makes tampons, reusable pads, applicators, period products that are better for women and people with periods and better for the planet. I used to work in the city in London, and then I met my now co-founder at dinner. We were talking about the difficulties of having a newborn baby, and she said that she had to run out to the supermarkets because she forgot her tampons into the pouring rain. And I said, well, why don't you get them delivered on subscription through your letterbox? And a few bottles of wine later, we had come up with an entire business plan as to how we could get these essential products into women's homes without any sort of risk of not having them. Through doing that business for several years, we worked out there was a much greater problem with the industry, which was to do with the plastic that's used in these disposable products, the chemicals that are used in cotton fields, and the language used around periods and the topic of menstruation. So we had a huge opportunity to disrupt our category. And so we turned to our investors and said, we've stopped believing in what we're doing. We want to make our own brand that addresses the issues. Thankfully, they all said yes and came with us.
Brilliant. Thank you. Next question. How do you understand the role of your organization in relation to the ecological emergency?
The role of DAME is pretty direct. Like, we set out to reduce the amount of plastic that gets thrown away in period products. So our role from a plastic point of view is significant. 100 billion plastic period products get thrown away every year globally. In the UK alone, 1.3 million plastic applicators get thrown away every day. A lot of these because of the area where they're used in cubicles are flushed down the loo. Therefore, they end up on beaches. And actually, period products are the fifth most common found plastic on UK beaches. So it's a very real problem from a plastic point of view. We also offset all of our carbon twice over. We are, as a business, carbon negative, but as a percentage, our carbon, it has a very, very small impact. But plastic is really where we can make the biggest difference.
Great, thank you. I'll move to the next question. What do you find most challenging about leading an organization and making choices to prioritize ecological sustainability? Do you have any examples of particular situations, please?
I think we're fortunate in that our commercial objectives are very aligned with our environmental ones. So for every reusable product that we sell, we can save thousands of disposables. So therefore, by selling more, we can have a greater impact, which is very rare, I guess, in a lot of industries. So for us, the big drive for us is, can we make people use a reusable product and stick with it? And the challenge is then, like, how do you make them stick with it? Because changing habits is very difficult. So we are very careful. We measure, we interview people after 100 days of using their product. So after three periods, are they still using it? How often are they still using it? And that way we can accurately measure the impact that we're having. What we don't want to do is be making products that go out there and then don't get used and then just get thrown away. So it's really, really important that we make things that last and that have a high adoption rate. So that's really important. In terms of our the challenges, well, we ultimately are making a product that's only bought once. And how do you align that with repeat revenue from disposable products is very difficult. But we feel that there's a place for reusable products by making them, you know, fantastic quality, making sure that they can last several washes without looking or performing any worse, and ultimately charging a premium for that. Whilst we are charging a premium, it does still save you money over time. So if you switch to our reusable pads, not only does it save 1,000 plastic disposables, but it will save you between £80 and £200 over a 5-year period. So there are very much ways that people can win, their wallets can win, and the planet can win. We just got to make sure that those products do perform very well and do stand the test of time.
Thank you very much. Next question. Are there situations when you look back that you feel that you didn't make the best organizational choices in acting for ecological sustainability? What would you have done differently?
I think we try and design our products with the environment in mind from the word go. So they are created not only for performance, but with resources in mind. For example, when we made our reusable pads, we did a carbon analysis before designing them, a hypothetical one as to what it might look like, and worked out that actually it's the washing of the pads that is where the greatest amount of carbon is used. Therefore, we try to design into the product a way of washing it which was didn't require a whole new load of didn't require people to wash it on their own. So it was a reusable washing bag, and what it means is that people can take their pad out, or you know, their used pad, and they can put it in the bag and it can soak. And if it's soaked before going into the wash, then you can put it in with your clothes, which means you can have a full washing load. You don't have to just wash them on their own, so, because you don't want to put them in with your clothes. And that decision was the difference between increasing the carbon of our product compared to disposables by 20 times and reducing the carbon by 40 times. So that was a huge shift in just designing products correctly from the right way. And I think I wish we'd done that across the board with all of our products from the word go, because I think looking at the life cycle from cradle to grave before even designing it really helps with making sure that you have a complete solution, because so often you can reduce one thing and then, you know, reduce plastic but increases carbon over here, or you can reduce carbon and increases plastic. So from the outset, making sure that both are reduced would have been something that we'd love to have done from the beginning.
Great, thank you. In your organization, are there situations when there have been tensions between acting uncompromisingly for ecological sustainability and attaining financial profits? Do you have some examples, please?
Yes, I mean, sadly, there are. Our most long-term commercially lucrative product is our tampons. And now our tampons contain no plastic. The wrapper is cellulose. They're made of organic cotton. They're as good as they can be, but they are still disposable and they still have a carbon footprint. And yet they are our most lucrative financial, bringing the most revenue for us, because people just come back and back and back and buy them. And this is something that we, you know, every industry sees is, you know, if you build something to be used once, in our industry, that is a menstrual cup, which is, you know, by far the most environmentally friendly product that you can use, and yet has very, very low adoption rates. Yes, like, we do push our tampons because that does drive a lot of our revenue, which keeps our business going. They are the best tampons they can be, but ultimately what we need to be doing is starting to steer people onto the truly environmentally friendly ones. But sadly, consumers don't like big steps, they like small steps. And we would much rather get 80% of people moving 20% of the way than get 20% of people moving 80% of the way. So it's really about making incremental steps and getting people to move as far as they feel comfortable. Otherwise, they're not going to move at all.
Absolutely. This makes a lot of sense. Now I'll move to other questions in terms of your own leadership and good practices. What do you think is involved in being a good leader in your organization? Would you have any particular examples, please?
I think it's very important that people see the vision. I think an exercise that we've just gone through is to look at where the business wants to be in 10 years' time, and then work out where you need to be in 5 years' time to achieve that. And then if you want to be there in 5 years, where do you need to be in 1 year to achieve that? And then in 1 year, what you need to do in the next quarter to do that? Certainly as a founder, I have a vision. You know, my co-founder, we have visions of where the company is to be. And if people can't see that vision and see what sort of company you're trying to build and what kind of company you're trying to be and for who, it's very difficult because for them to get on board with some of the harder decisions or to really contribute as much as they could do because they can't see ultimately, you know, the end of the road. So that's something that I think we've learned very clearly is that there's no point talking about today and tomorrow, you know, when people can't see what's happening in necessarily in a year or 3 years' time. So I think that's been a big, big learning for us.
Great, thank you. How would you say your leadership style is different from mainstream green businesses?
Do you mean as a business or personally?
Both, I would say. Of course, you can disagree with the question.
I think we very much encourage people to make mistakes and to think big. We're in the business of changing an industry. When we first started selling tampons back in 2014, the idea of a reusable tampon applicator just would have been laughed out of shops. But when we launched it in 2019, all the supermarkets came and asked us to stock it. You know, timing is everything, but I think thinking big and thinking different and being daring and challenging the status quo, I think is really, really important. And I think that's something that Dame has done incredibly well. We've been fortunate with our timing. We launched our reusable applicator about 6 months before Blue Planet was launched and the whole plastic revolution went mad globally. So we were just ahead of the curve. But I think, yeah, trying to take a little slice of Elon Musk and just think, well, if that's where we want to be and what we want to achieve, well, what do we need to do now in order to do it? And just be unashamed in that approach of how you go about it and just go for it. And if it's right and compelling enough, people will always follow.
Thanks a lot. This makes sense indeed. Last set of questions on the big picture. So based on debates at Glasgow and beyond, what is exciting and frustrating you in terms of business addressing the environmental emergency?
There was a lot of good noise that came out of COP, but it could have been louder. And I think the government can be bolder. You know, why is the UK not making headlines in doing things, in setting bigger targets or increasing, you know, taxes far more than anyone else in different areas? Like, well, there still seems to be this belief that it's not really happening and we can take small steps and we can appease business and we can appease, you know, big stakeholders. But the reality is that difficult decisions need to be made now. If running the earth was a company and you saw the direction that it was going in, you know, you really would be doing a big strategic, you know, overhaul and saying, well, this is a terrible trajectory we're on. We need to slash, you know, slash consumption here. So whilst there are positive moves, they're just definitely not big enough. Like, let's double down on the efforts now and then have an easier ride later, rather than go in half-heartedly now and then have to do quadruple the amount of work later. And I still think that humans can't really get their head around the idea of exponential problems. Like, we only think in linear terms. And most of the world's problems are exponential, whether it be plastic going into the ocean or carbon being produced. And so we have to get ahead of that curve now, which means ultimately much deeper cuts, much bolder moves from governments.
Thank you very much. This was really clear in terms of emphasizing the role of governments. Really interesting indeed. Last one. What needs to happen in terms of change for businesses so they can address the environmental emergency? How would you characterize such a change, please?
B Corp is the sort of bare minimum of what needs to happen. Businesses need to be more transparent so that they can hold themselves accountable and be held accountable. Without that level of transparency, we're never going to know where we are, and businesses aren't going to know what needs to be done. So I think grading systems like the B Corp grading system are incredibly important. But like I said, I think they're the bare minimum. I think it's 80 that you have to get now to be a B Corp. Like, I think that needs to be turned up to 100. There needs to be a greater carrot and stick approach through, I guess, consumer actions, but also government like relief for those businesses, you know, that can manage to do things well. And also it's a collaborative process. You know, we all share this planet. We all share in the spoils of the resources that the planet gives us. So ultimately, I think we all need to be held accountable for what's happening. Grading systems like B Corp are great. Transparency is really important. People need to, I guess, proffer up what their business is doing at any point in time, and so they can be held accountable by consumers and governments alike.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting indeed. This issue of accountability, that's a very, very relevant point, because it seems to me that unfortunately companies like yours that are doing a really great job are not enough rewarded somehow by the different systems we have to measure accountability, and that, you know, companies that are not that great are able to get away with some PR, whereas others do a great job. And this can be sorted out by more thorough ways to rate companies, to check what they do. And also the state has a role in that. So for example, there is the discussion around the taxonomy in the European Union, you know, for sustainable business and so on. Many people have complained that it's not enough specific, and that's a problem for the companies that are really trying their best to move forward, I guess.
Yeah, no, exactly. But it is difficult. And ultimately, what people say they want to do in terms of sustainable purchasing and what they actually end up doing is very different. And we all, I think, tend to ditch our sustainable habits when things get tough or there's difficult decisions. So I guess the sooner we can make all the sort of main big brands and the big parts of our life as sustainable as possible, then there will be no sacrifice that needs to be made. But yeah, we have got used to a level of comfort that is totally unsustainable. It is a very difficult balance to get, but certainly in our category, I think period pants are a really good example of how to change people's habits with significant reductions in impact, but also an improvement in people's experience. You know, both the comfort level of the users gone up, the performance of the products has gone up, and the sustainability has gone up, and it's a sort of triple win. And I think that is a sort of benchmark in things that need to happen.
Yeah, that's really extremely interesting. But it seems to me that based on what you're saying, and your own company, with the right product, even with a relatively small company, if you have the right product which is at scale, you can make a difference in terms of sustainability.
I guess what I'm really saying is that people are not prepared to sacrifice or to give on performance or comfort at any point. So whatever the sustainable option, it has to measure up. Otherwise, it's never going to be adopted. It has to look as good, it has to perform as good, it has to feel as good. And we see that time and time again with our products, but also, you know, if you look at clothing, if you look at building materials, you know, any of that stuff, it's normally only on sort of the second, third, fourth iterations of things where it sort of actually works. But, you know, with consumers and the next generation more aligned with what needs to happen, I think they're probably much more willing to make those leaps and be early adopters in these new brands, you know, more than necessarily my generation were.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's a hope perhaps with the changes in terms of mindsets of consumers and of new generations. Younger people seem to be more conscious about the environment. So hopefully this will be one thing that will help go in the right direction in terms of the environmental emergency. So thank you so much, Alec. This was really fantastic.
Thank you very much, Charles. Thanks for having me on. And it's a great course, well worth doing.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye, Alec.
Bye.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. This project was completed in 2022 by Dr. Stephen Allen at the University of Sheffield and Dr. Charles Bartold at the Open University. Their work was supported by a grant from the Society of the Advancement of Management Studies. The Progressive Green Business Leaders interviewed are identified as people who do business differently by working uncompromisingly for ecological sustainability. The recorded interviews have been produced and uploaded for others to use in their teaching and learning. For more information, please email stephen.allen@sheffield.ac.uk or charles.bartold@open.ac.uk.